Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm very excited. I have a special guest come back on the show again for a repeat visit because she's going to talk to us about something kind of exciting going on in her life. Probably many of you remember Kelly Ware. She talked to us about permaculture. She's been one of the most downloaded episodes, so I know almost everybody's heard it. But today she's talking about moving across, I don't know if you'd say it's across the world, but it could be just as far as I'm concerned, to another country, all the way to Panama. So welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
And you're going to share some secrets for what you are taking with you to start a permaculture kind of a farm, a whole farm. Like we didn't, in the pre-interview, we didn't really get through specifics. So go ahead and tell us. You just talk and I'll be quiet.
Well, of course, when you study permaculture, you realize as soon as you start picking up all these sciences and so many different type of raising food or animals. And so you think, gosh, if I had a farm, I would need this. If I had a farm, I'd need that. Well, when you decide to move to a place that is a developing nation, you realize that you can't just go on Amazon and get all your sprinkler parts or your soil amendments or, you know, buy that used tree transplanting machine because we're in Christmas tree growing area and you might not find that, or Chiquita might not loan it out from their banana farms. So you really want to go down. And also, you know, I've been a massage therapist for 27 years and I keep joking that I really want to retire and become a farmer. Uh-huh. And it's not a joke. It's really the plan. So we have sold enough of our just tangibles, mainly my husband's, you know, sporting goods and prepping things, that we've been able to finance literally being able to live for a year down there while getting this farm set up. So it's going to be a monumental effort, but I would like it to seamlessly come into place without going, oh, where's that hammer? Or the basic stuff like that hammer and all that basic tools you can get down there for relatively the same amount of price.
Okay, and then why don't you tell us a little bit about your family and like how amazing it is that you raise your kids and you're going to feed everybody and do, you're not just moving just you and your husband, like some of the woofers I've talked to off on you know, hitchhiking around on their with their backpacks. You guys have a little more to go.
Yeah, well, we're lucky because we have been working with people online that are in these other countries where there are a lot of Americans moving to because either the climate is better or the food production is better or the political situation might be better. Maybe where you can increase your chances of sustainability, especially if you have children, you really, one of the first permaculture principles is to see that the needs of yourself and your family are met. And every winter when I'm driving to the grocery store, I'm thinking, I'm not sustainable here. I don't want to eat canned food all winter. You know, I like dried meat, but, you know, I don't want to be caught in a winter situation with my family over the long term if things get, I mean, anything could happen, but really the main thing is that the food in America is so polluted. We don't know what the effects are going to be with all this pollution on so many levels that I have a son with a challenged immune system and we can't be exposing him to things, you know, seriously, the Americans have been sold out so badly to the corporatocracy about their food system that literally, personally, I'm fleeing this country in search of wintertime raw food that comes right off a tree. That to me is so enticing. So anyway, our reason for going down there is that he's got a lung damage from black mold that we lived in a house taking care of my dad and had black mold in the bathroom when I gutted it and those spores got into his system. Most people can kind of fight it off or they are affected to whatever the degree is the weakness in their immune system, whether it's depression or stomach issues or skin issues or eye or ear, whatever that it goes into your body. But my son has always had lung issues and he was my little croupy baby. So he literally can't live in the air of Montana. I was looking around Lakeside beautiful pieces of land coming right off that creek, coming down from Blacktail. And I always had a dream that I'd have a retreat center with a ski resort in my backyard. So I found a great piece of land up there for sale, you know, affordable, could do a really cool yurt project, permaculture camp. I always think in terms of a permaculture retreat center. So no matter where I go, I'm planning what I would do to set this up, to implement a permaculture eco wellness school retreat. So somebody was joking, what do you want to call it? I'm like, the eco wellness retreat. How about today I was doing massage and I'm like, okay, I'm going to call it the College of Well-Being, because that really translates well in Spanish, which is El Colegio del Bienestar. So I thought, well, that's a good thing. You know, the College of Well-Being, you know, we'll figure out what well-being means, and that's what we'll teach.
Excellent.
You know, right. So it's how to get from here to there. That's the trick.
It's interesting that you say that, because like after talking to some of my guests lately, I don't know, there was just something about driving around, looking at people's lawns and thinking, I can't believe some people let their kids play on these lawns. Like, especially my Father's Day episode, I talked to someone who was talking about this book that's recently come out about dogs and how come dogs in America don't live as long because of the pesticides, that because they're such smaller bodies, like humans can probably handle it, but dogs can't. And over the long term, I just thought that's weird, because I guess I never had a little toddler at home. My husband, my stepkids were older when we got married. And so, And certainly we never had to worry about, you know, there's certainly no chemicals on my lawn that you'd have to worry about a little kid. But it just seemed odd to me. And so then, the food
the grass.
Is. But, you know, when I started this podcast, I hadn't really ever thought about it. You know, I just thought, well, I'm not going to put, you know, weed killer on my lawn. But it never occurred to me that other people are letting their little kids, you know, go crawl in the grass.
Well, it's so insidious, the whole toxic nature. And you'd think that people would start to realize, if it's good for the environment, it's good for us. If it's bad for the environment, it's bad for us. And there's going to come a day when people stop doing business because it doesn't serve long-term business or life or anything. And, you know, I get so, every time somebody gets mad at God for somebody dying of cancer, why did this happen? I'm like, this was not God's plan, because we have gotten so far away from God's creatures and God's creation to be able to completely support us so well in every way that we literally are just picking stuff off the trees. We do not have to really toil for our food. And it's really great. I came across a website called something like God's Resources, and it was these missionaries that had been in Africa or something, and they were botanists, and they came up with a website database, I think it's called God's Resources, that has 27,000 edible species. And their whole idea is to eradicate hunger by using God's creation. And the whole thing about permaculture is propagation, and really as quickly as you can, propagating useful and beneficial species. So you want to be able to think about, if I had to go somewhere or set up a permaculture school, camp, internship center, retreat, sanctuary. I mean, there's so many Americans that are like, quote unquote, escaping America right now, that I feel called to go down there and set up a camp for people that are coming there to escape the toxicity of America that's toxic on every single level. And I feel like I keep joking. I tell everybody, I'm going to go and set up the Montana winter retreat. So I'm telling everybody to send their teenage kids to me, and I will teach them about regenerative and sustainable agriculture while making sure they stay out of the toxic American reality, unfortunate to the people because of our government, et cetera, and corporations and laws and all that. Lack of laws, the right laws.
All right.
So that's the end of my political spiel, because there's a lot of solutions that we need to really be focusing on.
Okay, cool. Well, let's get to some of those. So what are you – are you going to tell us why you picked Panama?
Well, okay, so we had to be in the tropics. Otherwise, I would have gone to Chile, because that's where I went to college and I love it. Or everybody's going to Uruguay because it's a really hip, organic permaculture country too. Or Ecuador, because there's so much restoration that needs to happen there to, you know, help people recover from the oil all over the jungle, and it's a beautiful climate. But we picked Panama because, we just had a lot of, I'd say, kind of coincidental calling type things where, for example, I had looked at Costa Rica or Belize, and I'd met people in both places. And one of the guys at the Rancho Mastatal in Eco School in Costa Rica, they take on internships, and there are people from like graduate programs that are trying to get into their internship, and they take 12 out of 200 applicants. So he said, Kelly, you might like Boquete. So because it's really easy for gringos that don't know how to speak the language to get their foot into the door of America while having an American community to still support them. And so it's very hard if somebody doesn't speak a language to go, you know, learn how to sink or swim in another country. I did it as a teenager when I did 2 years of college down in Chile. So the thought of myself going back into a Latin culture just tickles a part of my soul that hasn't been touched in, you know, a long time. So we picked this place because of that. And then my husband has been listening a lot to this radio program called True News, and it's Christian-oriented prophecy. A lot of people having dreams about really bad things happening in the States coming up, you know, different waves of different times this fall and this winter. And I mean, you know, I don't, people can take it or leave it, but the writing's already on the wall, just what already is going on in this country, not to mention, you know, the multi-trillions of dollars of debt that we've never had and the imminent crash of the entire financial system worldwide. So it's not like anybody will be safe anywhere from it. But I would choose to go through it in a place where you'd never die of hunger because there's always a mango off the wild tree off down every street. Cool. And there's fish in the ocean. The word Panama means land of many fish. And, you know, I don't know how non-toxic the oceans are there, but they don't have the cloud seeding things going on, the weatherization programs like they do here, spraying stuff all over in the skies. And the ocean currents that go by there are from deep down somewhere off the coast of Chile. And I mean, personally, I really don't believe in eating out of the oceans at this point in day. But, you know, I guess the house we want to rent has a pond I can finish and grow my own tilapia.
Okay. Well, that was a lot right there. So let me just back up really quick. So your husband doesn't speak Spanish, or he does, or just a little bit, or
just enough to get down the street? You know,
he's. And how about your kids? But they're probably quick learners.
They're quick learners, and everybody's been doing this program on their app, on their computers or whatever, called Duolingo. Duolingo, and it's a great way for kids to learn any language. So,
right.
You know, you can get it. Yeah, my kid, you know, they were kind of like, "We're Panama. There's like deadly snakes down there." Yeah, my son's like, "Mom, did you see the pictures of the guy's foot falling off from the Fer de Lance?"
Oh my goodness!
I'm like, "Oh, honey, they won't bother you. Just emit good God energy. God'll take care of you."
And look where you're living anyway, where we've got bears and mountain lions and wolves and all those things anyway. And how often do you run into them?
Right.
So
exactly.
That's probably how often you run into a snake in Panama, too. I mean, I could be totally wrong, but
I don't know. I'd take a snake any day over to.
I listened to this podcast, The Montana Road Tripping Girls, and it's so funny because they are so afraid. The one girl is, anyway, is so afraid of rattlesnakes. And, you know, I've lived in Montana all these years and haven't run into a rattlesnake. And I even did some time on the east side and still never saw a rattlesnake. So, yeah. You know, we got snakes here, too, I guess, if you trust those mountains.
Well, and, you know, the biggest threat you actually have down there is like thievery, you know, petty crime and stuff. And so we decided to take our very big Newfoundland dogs. And, oh, my gosh, the expense at getting them down there is going to be astronomical. I'm like, they only have another 2 or 3 years left on their life. Can't we just, like, I don't know.
Somebody give them an old age home.
Well, you know. I'd have to have mountains in the background so they can roam, and then a stream so that they could cool off after they're roaming. So if anybody lives near the mountains that wants two fabulous Newfoundlands to chase the deer away, then please let me know.
Well, you're in the right place for that, you know.
Yeah.
That's how we got our first big dog. He was at the pound, and my husband looked at my stepdaughter was picking out a dog, and she was like, and he's like, "Well, you know, we've got space for a dog like that where most people don't." He was one of our best dogs ever. Well, and I loved him because he could see the table. It was like he was a human because when he sat, he was eye level. You know, he could see, most dogs are, you know, they can't see the table, but he was so tall, he could see right at the table. And it seemed like you were just having a person right there with you.
And I've got the two brothers, and the one is I swear he's part wolf. And so you know, he's so bonded to me. I couldn't break his heart by leaving him. So we're looking at extra large kennels to fly these guys in the ticket, somewhere from $700 to $1,000. So that's been something that weighed really heavily on my heart for a long time, is, gosh, what to do with my dogs? And then we've got this other little bird dog. She's pretty vicious and good, isn't it? Protector, but then do we want her away from her brothers, these two big newfies? And so anyway, we just decided to just...
Everyone's going.
Trust in the abundance, and somehow we'll be able to afford our silly, dumb dogs.
That we know deep down you really love. Like,
they're the main source of love in my life.
Yeah. All right. Well, so what are you taking with you, Kelly? Tell us about so you've been working on this list.
I have, and there are three things that I think are key for my reality down there. One, it would be the key line plow. I don't know of anybody in Panama that has a key line plow or that's done any of these things, any of these trainings down there. There are people doing this kind of work in other countries, but I haven't seen it around that area. So the key line plow is a subsoil soil ripper that goes down underneath the surface, and it lifts up the surface. So it breaks the hard pan of the surface, and it allows the big rain events to soak into the earth and recharge the whole water hydration system of the land. And you cut these lines just slightly off contour by about 1 to 4 degrees, and it moves the water out to the ridge lines or to where it's dry from the gully areas. So this really slows down or stops erosion in the gully areas, and it helps these big rain events to spread out where it's dry. Now, in that area, they say that you put a stick in the ground and it grows because there's consistent rain up in the cloud forest, and there is a rainy season that it'll rain from basically April to October. And you also want to be able to move the lands that are oversaturated. You want to be able to move the water evenly throughout the landscape. So whether it's too rainy or not rainy enough, the land would be hydrated, and it would be able to store that water. These cuts off contour are like a mini swale. And then the second tool I would get would be a tree transplanter. And a lot of times you can rent these through your NRCS, the Natural Resources and Conservation District or something. You can rent these, but I want to try to find one to buy. I found one over in Bonner's Ferry. If anyone's coming this way, I need to get it over here. But I would take these, and it makes it so that you go along this key line cut with your tree transplanter, and you just drop trees in. Bloop, 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 bloop. This one kid that was 24 years old online at Mark Shepherd's place, that was working at the Restoration Agriculture place in Wisconsin, this 24-year-old was planting 6,000 trees in a day. I mean, tell me what kind of 24-year-old can make such a contribution to this planet like that. But with these tree transplanters, boy, you could just run them all night long, and you plant not only your trees, your fruits and nuts, but then you can also plant your berry bushes and your other herbs. And so basically it cuts, it opens it up, you put the tree in, and it closes it back up. And these create more of a swale, so that anytime you have the rain events, the water is being caught right there, and the ground has already been opened up for the tree to be able to grow. Ideally, you'd cut it up, you'd open it up, and you'd drop down some nitrogen-fixing plants with a deep taproot, so that the next season comes around, you put your trees in, then they've got that nutrition in there to grow. But this is volcanic soil. It's highly mineralized. They say they don't even need any kind of fertilizers are there. Most of the food is grown organically anyway, because it's all there. It's all there in this ancient volcanic soil.
Okay. So we were going to mention to people, part of the reason we thought people would be interested because we thought, if you were going to start your own, you know, what would you want to have? What are like the most important things that you would want if you were going to start a permaculture like farm or.
Right. On a shoestring.
Yeah. And So how big is the place that you're, so you have a place all picked out and everything, you know exactly where you're going?
We know exactly where we're going, but then we're going to get there and rent and look around and find that perfect piece of land. There is probably a link I put on the last show is jefflawton.com, jefflawton.com. And you look at his video called The Property Checklist. And that kind of tells you what kind of property you would be wanting to find in a permaculture situation. Ideally, you'd have some sort of running water, hydroelectric, if possible, where you have slope. You'd want to put your home sort of in the middle of the slope so you could catch water for the home usage and then run it out into your system so you have no waste. So then the next thing that we get to that's really important, as far as land, we'll be looking for it. And we have other people that want to go in on this project with us down there, either as a place to get away for the winter or as an investment in a situation like exactly what I'm talking about, that they want to be part of a Panamanian, Northern Panamanian Ecos Wellness Center school. So anyways, the other thing that we're looking into is what would be the really good home building systems with the natural building. Down there, they call it bioconstruction. And I have really been excited about earth bag building because it suits that temperature down there as far as it staying cool in the daytime. And so we've looked at earth bag, but there's a cheaper way to do it that is called hyper adobe, H-Y-P-E-R adobe. And it's instead of taking the earth bags where you need two strands of four-prong barbed wire going between each row of bales, which, you know, does increase your tensile strength to be earthquake proof. The hyper adobe that I want to order, which is two or three times less expensive, is like the mesh bag that you get onions out of, and they have these long tubes, and the tensile strength is something like 20,000 pounds laterally. So what happens is when you put this dirt in this bag, it kind of falls partially through that poly weave, and then when you tamp it, it adheres to the dirt underneath it. So if you look up hyper adobe or even the earth bag building, there's all kinds of really interesting designs and things that you can do. Not only that, but earth bag is really popular as being earthquake proof, hurricane proof, bomb proof, you know, all that kind of stuff.
All right. Do you want to back up and tell people, like, I never heard of earth bag. And if I hadn't seen the picture you showed me, I'd really be in La La Land, or just like, what is she talking about? Like, to listeners who maybe probably have not heard of that, or maybe I'm the one with my head in the sand. But
earth bag is really exciting to me. I was a straw bale house builder back 20 years ago in Southern Utah. And that works for desert landscapes. But with my son being so ill with his lungs and I just can't afford any mold anywhere, I've really researched what kind of building strategies I would use. And I really like the slip form straw clay. And if you mix in lime plaster to it, then it's so alkaline that no mold can grow on the straw that you use in a slip form straw clay house building thing. And people are just going to have to Google that. Straw clay is basically you make a clay slip of clay and sand and water, the consistency of a milkshake, and you toss it like a salad onto your straw, and then you have a slip form of two pieces of like plywood going between your windows or for your wall or whatever, your 8 foot length of stretch, whatever you take a sheet of a 4x8 sheet of plywood, cut it in two, and you nail those to your post and beam structure. And then you put that straw in there, and one person goes along stepping on it, and the other people are tossing it and sticking it into the groove. And then you pour more clay slip in, or the clay slip with the lime, you know, you pour it in, and then you tamp it. And then by the time you're ready to go to the next section, or by the time you do the next section, the first section is set up, so you take those pieces of plywood off and you keep moving them down. So you kind of hopscotch two pieces of plywood around a post and beam structure and around your windows, and you do this really great slip form straw clay. And that would be another technique that I would use down there. The only thing with that is that you have the cost of the footers for your post and a post and beam structure, which might not be that much, which we will be trying these different these different techniques.
Oh,
but
okay.
But the earth bag building is neat because you can do a rubble trench, they call it. So you dig it deep, and of course when you're in a place that never freezes, it doesn't have to be as deep, but just whatever is the depth for earthquake stability, or I don't know. So then you fill it with gravel, and then you tamp the gravel, and you can start going right up with your earth bags. You might do what's called a stem wall, which is coming up with two like a double layer of earth bags, just one row next to the other. And then you come up, and then you go up with your walls, or then you can go up with straw clay. So regardless, these earth bags are going to really help us to either create a really good foundation for our, you know, without cement, for our straw clay slip form. We could use bamboo as the structure. Oh. So we'll get into all kinds of that sort of alternative architecture and try to have our homes built in a way that's going to be able to have, say, greenhouse walkways right off them. In areas like this, you don't know about the snakes and the bugs and everything. And just to reduce your exposure to the elements, whether it's a storm or rain or whatever, to be able to have either a glassed-in porch or a plasticed-in, I don't like plastic, but the greenhouse or whatever, mm-hmm. or a screened-in porch, or just something that like maybe even has shade cloth over top. So your house is some sort of like a you know, more of a living structure that can feed you without maybe having to, you know, get bit by a snake when you go pick your lettuce or something. And then you could have your bigger, you know, zone 2 and zone 3 and 4 and 5 areas outside where you get into your orchard and your longer term squash production and stuff like that. Your animals.
What kind of animals are you going to have? Like chickens, you mean, right? Or
well,
sheep,
yeah,
or something?
We're looking at going into the duck business. Jack Spierko has a really great program all about ducks on he's got a video YouTube called The Duck Chronicles. And mm-hmm. in that, it has all the tools that you would need to successfully raise ducks. Electric fencing is something that's on my list. And I have bought a lot of that from Premier One Fencing. And I have both the kind that you can charge by a battery or that you've got solar. And so I would probably invest in some more solar toys, tools, because the electricity is commonly stops there. So people aren't as dependent on it, which is a good thing. It's kind of how we want to be here too. A friend of mine.
So when you mean commonly stops, you mean like they have outages?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, what I first was picturing is like, you know, the road ending and the power ends. You know,
well, that too. I want to be able to get a piece of land that's not dependent on electricity coming to it. On the Permaculture Podcast, there's a really great show by Ethan Hughes that just came out a couple of weeks ago. It's an Adam Campbell. They've been doing sort of like these no electric permaculture eco schools, and it's amazing. Like they say, you know, you might have limitations in one area, but it opens you up to all these other opportunities in other areas. And my friend Paul Wheaton from Permies, he is doing a lot with the rechargeable, what do you call those, chainsaws. So they've been able to, like, somebody said they could cut down 9 trees on one charge of an electric chainsaw, solar-powered chainsaw. So are rechargeable. So those are kind of things to consider. It's like, you know, how cost effective would it be versus just getting, you know, your typical chainsaw down there, and, you know, we've got a chainsaw, can we sell it for more here and then buy a cheap, you know, we don't know. We've got these hot high dollar items like a generator. Do we take down a generator? I think it would probably be a good idea, you know, but then there's the risk. Are you going to be taxed on it at the port down there? I've heard of people who put solar panels in their shipping container, and then they get taxed on them. So it'd be cheaper to buy their solar panels down there. So there is some research that has to happen. I looked into shade screen from Alibaba and bug netting, and because so many things from China go through Panama anyway, it was cheaper to order that from Panama. But other things, you know, like this mesh that comes from Canada, I had the link. I'll pull it up. It's something like meshbags.ca, but I'll look it up. anyways, that was a lot cheaper. It would have been two or three times the expense of these earth bags to get them from Ontario down there than to just ship them here and put them in my container. So get this, Jackie. These 3,000 foot rolls of this earth bag, and you just cut off long lengths, and you do like pantyhose around the bottom of a bucket. And so one person's filling a bucket, handing it to the next guy, they're pouring it in the bucket, and it's filling in place. And so you just have these people, the work of building a house is just filling buckets and pouring them into place, and then wheelbarrows of whatever, and you dig the dirt right up from below your feet. Or if it's not the right clay mixture, you can have somebody bring you a truckload of dirt, which is usually dirt cheap. And I know, that's good, right?
So, yeah, and see, and the picture that you showed me, it looks like, is it kind of like there's like a spiral? And then it looked like there were like windows, like almost like solar lights or something that it wrapped around. Am I like, I know I only looked at it for a second, but.
Yeah, there's a whole, if you just click on hyperadobe.com, you'll see the whole technique. There's a video on how to build your house. You basically can, you could put glass bottles if you wanted to through the walls. You build a frame for whatever kind of glass or window you want in there, and then you earth bag up to it and then over top, and you create actually like a dome. And you could either build a honeypot style dome house, which takes out the expense of a roof system, or you can just build walls that are straight, but they have to be buttressed every about 8 feet, I think. And or you can build something that's curvy, and the more curvy it is or round, like a kiva, then that has strength. It's stronger. So you know, I'm coming up with all kinds of ideas of things, and it's really neat to look at the architectural. Pinterest has some really cool pictures on, if you just hit earth bag on Pinterest, and anything that's earth bag will work for the hyper adobe, the other bags, the mesh bags.
Okay. How about seeds? You were showing me a list of seeds.
Yeah, I came across this Heirloom Organics non-hybrid seeds, and they have all these farm pack varieties. Gosh, they've got medicinals, the full medicinal garden, the full culinary garden, the full tea garden, which is so exciting because now I'm going to be in a climate that I can grow tea. This is a climate that's basically where a little bit higher. It's about where Whitefish is altitude-wise. And they can grow all the greens. They can grow everything. The only thing that you can't grow are things that need to be, you know, have the cold chill hours. So really, it's kind of like a grower's paradise. And I'm one of these type of people that I love to plant and build beds and design everything, but I hate to water. I hate to like figure out how to keep my plants alive once I've put them in my fabulous garden. So anyway, so I'm looking at these Heirloom Organic seeds, which are, I'm sure some perennial seeds, but I'm sure a lot of them are.
Okay,
are
can I just interrupt super quick?
Yeah.
I just got to make sure. All right. When you say the elevation is about the same as where Whitefish is, you mean in Panama where you're moving to?
Yeah, it's
okay.
About...
For some reason, I was thinking that was the Heirloom Organic Company.
Oh,
got a little
no.
Confused there. Okay.
No,
so where you're moving to is about the same elevation as Whitefish, which I think is like, what, 4,500 feet?
Ooh, maybe not that high. We're going to go to some place that's, I think it's between 3,500 and 4,000 feet.
Okay.
And
I think that anywhere
in the whole central mountain range of Central America, I think it would be ideal growing area. I mean, anytime you get these coastal mountains that you have all these, like in this one area where we're going, they said there are 50 different microclimates within the one bioregion.
Oh.
And it's going to be the same way. Costa Rica we looked at, but I guess, you know, it's a socialistic government, and so it's getting very expensive in certain ways. It's harder to own land, and the crime is going up, and it's just you know, I it's going to be difficult no matter where you go. You're going to have issues to deal with. But as far as me being a gardener and somebody who's always wanted to do an eco retreat and a wellness center and eat raw food, it's worth the risk. You know, I live on the reservation. There are risks everywhere. You know, there are risks living in the United States. And anyway, so I wanted to just go through, I made a little list of things. The other really important thing that I want to like whole couple categories I wanted to look at is when you go to a place, you have to start a nursery, whether it's you're going to be growing things for your community or for your farm. Learning how to propagate plants and learning how to start seeds and learning how to get yourself into a situation where you can take care of your babies is so important. And so what I see, part of my vision is that while we're going to be this school and center, we're just going to be a propagation center to start other centers. So not only are we making way for people to be able to, you know, to feed themselves down there, but we're making a way for people to use what plants we can collect and propagate to start their farms and to start that. Because I want to get, in order to build resilience in any area, you have to get as many permaculture farms as you can, or ecological farms or sustainable farms or whatever. The more you can localize your food systems, the better everyone's going to be. And so starting your nursery, there's a really great plant propagation class by Nicholas Ferguson, and it is on the Perma Ethos website. That's PermaEthos. And it's the plant propagation course. It's an online course. It was $300 when I got it, so it's probably maybe even cheaper now. I don't know. But it's totally worth it. In there, he's got the right kind of spray equipment that you need to do an intermittent mist system, because you want to have something that might automatically come on at certain times, like for 10 seconds every hour, so that the plants that you put in, they don't rot and they don't dry out, and it makes it so that you can take cuttings or start seeds or whatever, and they're going to grow into really nice plants that you can then pot up and sell or pot up and grow under your shade screen. So shade screen is another really important thing that I want to make sure I have before I leave. Or, you know, really when I get there, I don't know if I'm going to have the money. You know how things get when you get to a place, it's like all of a sudden you don't, you know, you want to spend your money on this like land, and then you don't have enough to get your basic essentials. So what I'm trying to do is have my basic essentials with me, so that even if I have to lease a piece of land, everything I have is transportable to go to, you know, one piece to another piece. The other thing I'm doing is I went to Walmart and I bought a bunch of really, I know it's Walmart, but high quality, inexpensive, because I'm on a budget, hand tools. So I bought those shovels that have kind of like the flat part, so when you step on them in flip-flops, it doesn't hurt your foot. And those are like $15 each. I went down to a secondhand store and all of their tools were even more expensive, you know, with the wood handles and everything, than I could get at Walmart for brand new. And I'll, you know, things that I've always wanted here, like one of those tree trimmer things that goes up really high and can take branches off. They always say everything in the jungle grows. That's not the trick. The trick is how to manage it, because it grows you out. So one of the things that I really want to have in my shipping container and invest in before I go, and as a form of trade or barter, are these serrated sickles that I told you was my favorite tool last time. So the Japanese serrated sickle, and if you get them by 1,000, which I recommend that everybody order 1,000 and go into the serrated sickle selling business, because you could sell these at farmers markets for $10 easy, because they are the number one tool. I give them to everybody for their birthdays. I order 10 for myself because I'm always losing them or giving them away. I have to spray paint the handles red so I can find them when I set them down. But anyway, I'd like to take 1,000 to 3,000 of those down there, because it's kind of like, you know how on the communist flag they always have the sickle, or you're turning your, you know, your swords into plowshares or whatever. The idea behind the serrated sickle is even more amazing, because you can harvest your herbs in big quantity. You can harvest your weeds for mulch in big quantity, you know, by hand. The other good thing to have is a scythe. So I ordered myself a scythe, and I found one at the secondhand store too. So, you know, a scythe cuts things on a large scale, like fodder for your animals, but then the serrated sickle cuts everything at the farm. So it's much better than machete. or than a sharp scythe, because you're not swinging it at anything. So the, you know, one of the biggest things in the jungle or anywhere, you know, if you're sort of homesteading, one of the biggest threats is cutting yourself accidentally. Really? You know, or so, you know, you don't want to be out there swinging a machete all over the place. I mean, you always get these kids getting hurt or whatever. But the serrated sickle is, like, I took down 2.5 acres of knapweed in 8 hours. Just 4 days of 2-hour morning sessions, I did 2.5 acres of knapweed, and I got a great workout. And I'm like, yeah, permaculture CrossFit. Everybody should be doing this. It's really great. It's fun. I feel so great. And so there's this whole art to serrated sickling, right? But it's like cutting through butter. And, you know, it's, I go out there, I do not fear my morning glory, my bindweed anymore, because I'm not pulling it. I'm not hurting my joints. I'm just going out there and I'm slicing it. I'm rolling it back like a carpet and using it for mulch. And I totally am at harmony with taming my garden, even the quackgrass, with the serrated sickle. So I want to order, and that was actually more inexpensive to ship it to Montana than to Panama, which makes no sense at all because it all comes from China. But you know, I might want to check on that some more. But you know, they just have super tankers that are only headed for the United States, and then it's cheaper to you know, to do it there than to unpack it and send it to David. So anyways, that is another tool I really wanted to take because I felt like I could go around to nurseries and I could trade them serrated sickles for some of their plant stock. You know, that'll be another big expense when I get down there. We're selling the 5th generation Civil War built grandfather clock, been in the family for 5 generations to every first male born. And I'm like, do you know how many trees that thing could buy? So, you know, all the things, I mean, we decided to keep the goat head because, you know, he was the oldest goat ever to go through the, so we couldn't leave Billy, but we almost sold him on eBay, but oh, you know, you got to be so, my husband's been so good. He's selling all his fly fishing rods and everything, just keeping one. And he's like, no, this is, all my toys are going to fund this trip. So I've been so proud of him. He's getting rid of all of his toys. He was getting rid of all of his goose calls and duck calls and elk calls and wolf calls. And I'm like, oh, honey, you're leaving your voices behind. And he goes, yep, but I'm going up for a new adventure. And I'm like, wow, that's really big when you can sell your elk call.
I guess they probably don't have elk down in Panama, though.
No.
Kelly's episode will be continued in part 2, where you can hear the rest of her list of items she's taken to Panama.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. Thanks again for listening, and grow local.